Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you're a politics watcher or an entertainment consumer, maybe you remember this.
And yet women have come so far as feminists that they don't feel obligated to vote for a candidate just because she's a woman. Women today feel perfectly free to make whatever choice Oprah tells them to. Which raises the question, why are people abandoning Hillary for Obama? Some say that they're put off by the fact that Hillary can't control her husband and that we would end up with co-presidents. Because that would be terrible, having two intelligent, qualified people working together to solve problems. Ugh! Why would you let Starsky talk to Hutch? I want to watch that show, Starsky.
That, of course, the celebrated Tina Fey sketch from Saturday Night Live, which some people say helped turn the tide for Hillary Clinton a while back. Well, our guest this hour has Hillary on her mind, and like a lot of us, she's wondering what lessons we can draw from Hillary's run. To quote her recent piece in the New York Times Magazine, "Will the senator be my example of how far we've come as women? Or how far we have to go? Is she proof to my daughter that you, as a woman, can do anything? Or the hell that will rain down on you if you try?" Two very different scenarios there. So we invite you to call in this hour and give us your take. What lessons have you learned from Hillary Clinton's run for the White House? If you're a Republican, does she stand at least for the empowerment of women? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Peggy Orenstein is our guest this hour. She's an award-winning writer, editor, and speaker about issues affecting girls and women. Her newest book was a bestseller, the memoir called Waiting for Daisy. And her article, The Hillary Lesson, appeared in last Sunday's New York Times Magazine. Peggy Orenstein, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Veronica.
Well, obviously you've heard that Tina Fey clip, right?
Yeah, I love Fey.
Who hasn't? But I do think, even though we've heard it a lot, I think it says something that we try to articulate, something we haven't figured out yet, which is what exactly Hillary's run for the nomination means. And to quote Madeleine Albright, Tina Fey kind of comes down on that one side where Madeleine said, there's a special ring of hell for women who don't support other women. Uh-huh. But what does that particular sketch say about women and Hillary Clinton to you?
Well, I just think she's great. But, you know, that was at a particular time in the campaign as well. And I think that it's what's complicated about Hillary Clinton, and what I've found, particularly in the wake of publishing this piece, which has been interesting, is the inability to separate policies or other ways people may think about her from the sexist reaction to her. And I was trying to be very clear. I mean, Tina Fey clearly very much is an advocate for Hillary Clinton, and mm-hmm. I was writing in a more neutral stance. I was just trying to be an observer, which is really hard to do because it's not really allowed.
It isn't really allowed. It seems as though you sort of have to take sides about whether you're a woman and you're a feminist, or whether, you know, you're coming from some other place, which might not necessarily be good.
I very much believe that, you know, voting, not supporting Senator Clinton does not make you a sexist, whether you're male or female. I mean, you have to, and I felt it was really important when I wrote to say, you know, what's confusing is she's not a victim, you know, I mean, and she certainly slung her share of mud, but all that aside, what interested me was that when there's such intense loathing of a woman as right. there is of her, this kind of over-the-top, and believe me, the emails that I've gotten, it's over-the-top loathing of a woman, that where it goes is to dismiss her and reduce her to being a woman, and to use that to attack her. To say, can I say the B word on the radio? I don't know if I can.
I wouldn't.
Okay, I won't.
I'm not sure about that either.
I mean, you know, the unfortunate thing is that you really can't say on the radio the stuff that I found. And, you know, to say, you know, life's a B, why vote for, you know, don't vote for one. The Hillary Nutcracker, the kinds of things that were kind of, you know, comparing her to the character in Fatal Attraction, or this kind of thing, that even the little stuff that used to happen, you know, looking at her hair, looking at her outfits.
Right.
All the ways, big and small, that we go when we dislike a woman to the fact of her being a woman and try to get rid of her and not just have her lose, but actually put a stake through her heart as a woman, interested me. And I felt said something, even in the face of the other thing Hillary represents, which is amazing progress of, shattering, what I say in the piece is the glass stratosphere of running, of being a viable presidential candidate. You know, both are true. And so how do you negotiate that? And how do you, and I was sort of looking at it from the position of a mom and having a small child, and what am I going to tell my daughter as she grows up about the truth about women in power, about what's real and what's not?
Well, it's also interesting to think about whether what we're seeing in response to Hillary is actually a reflection of her as a woman and maybe an expose of misogyny in our society. Or on the other hand, she is someone who comes with a lot of backstory, and we all know it. We all know that Bill Clinton cheated on her as a wife. We know she stood by her man. And so in that sense, she does sort of have this victim's backstory.
Yeah, well, and she also messed up healthcare. I mean, she is a complicated person, and that's why I feel like there's, she is not necessarily she's not necessarily the best model to look at in this way. At the same time, she is a model for to look at these questions, or a Rorschach, as she puts it, or a rune stone in some ways. And I've a lot of times what I get back is either it's just her, and I would vote for another woman. And I think, well, or, Michelle Obama is often brought up. I think, well, you probably would have compared, Michelle Obama is like Hillary, 20 years ago before we knew her. Nobody, Michelle Obama, too, she's a smart, strong, sassy woman who, right now think, oh, she would make a good president, but maybe in 20 years you'll think a little differently about her when you actually know her. Who knows, or Hillary, I think she's it's hard. The other thing that people say is, but she really is a bee. There was a guy on CNN who just said that the other day. But she is one, and she's abrasive. She's aggressive. And you think, there was a CNN clip which I think is even more interesting than that Tina Fey clip of Jeffrey Toobin on CNN. This was just Monday, I think. Talking about this. And one of the other guys, I can't remember what his name was, said, but she is.
Well, I am so conflicted about that word. I've hated it for years, and I've wished that no one would use it. And then it sort of has come roaring back, not even just in regards to Hillary Clinton. And it seems to have been sort of appropriated, these days a man can be one or a woman can be one. And I can't decide whether it's something that women have, because of that, reappropriated just to mean strong person, aggressive person, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, or whether it is still sort of a really stinging, not fair word.
Well, I wouldn't say reappropriated because it didn't ever really. Well,
right.
In the piece, one of the things I did was I talked about what the occasion for the piece was that my daughter is almost five, and we were walking down the street in Berkeley where I live, and we saw a bumper sticker on a mailbox that had a caricature of Senator Clinton, and she said, "Oh, look, Mom, it's Hillary," because she knows the two candidates. And she said, "What does it say?" And what it said was, "The Wicked Witch of the East is alive and living in New York." And I thought, I don't want to read that to her.
Yeah.
I live in Berkeley. I live in the bastion of political correctness. So to see that was. I thought, well, what does that mean, and what does that mean about what I say about her, and what I said in the piece that the caricature looked like a virago. It was viragonous. It looked like a virago, and at the end, I say, but virago means both a aggressive, overbearing woman and a heroic one, and so I think right there you have sort of the nub of the issue. How can one word mean something both extremely negative and extremely positive, or is that positive thing seen as a negative in a woman, or is the negative thing seen as a positive? It's just
right.
A very interesting question.
Yeah, and I guess maybe it's too early to say whether or not that word has been softened or made to be a compliment. Maybe we don't know. And I wonder with Hillary Clinton in particular, is there something about the particular time that we are living in sort of close off these really vitriolic culture wars and still simmering tensions about Bill Clinton's presidency that makes this run for her so volatile?
I think that that's true. I think that's absolutely true. As you were saying, the appropriation of that word, I was thinking also, it's interesting because the last appropriation women took was girl. People, you know, the girl became
right,
for,
girl
in the
power.
Sort of Sex and the City way. And it's interesting that we've moved on to, to that word. But, you know, anything with that, I think any word that has been used to sting a subgroup and causes real pain to a subgroup is ultimately taken on in a positive or a quasi-positive way by that group as a defense. I don't know if that, you know, then makes that okay, but it's certainly a reaction. I mean, you see it with the N-word for African Americans, or, you know, it's not an uncommon thing to do. I just actually was recently interviewed. I'm Jewish, and I was interviewed about Jewish women reclaiming the word Jewess in that kind of way, too, as a sort of aggressive or defiant posture.
Have you been surprised at all at what's come up during Hillary Clinton's run? I know that some of the more famous things that have happened have been, for instance, Rush Limbaugh's comment about how we're really not ready to see a woman age in the public eye, and the hecklers who asked her to iron their shirts. What did you think about that stuff? Did you see it coming?
Yeah. You know, that stuff, I think, when using Rush Limbaugh as an example is always problematic for me, although I think I did it because it's easy and because it's obvious and because although he obviously has a lot of followers, it allows probably most of the audience that listens to public radio to say, well, not me. And what has been more disturbing to me has been what it's revealed within worlds that we consider liberal, and when liberal men go there, and I've seen a lot of couples really fracture, you know, really, you know, they just have to not talk about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's very hard for, I saw a real gender divide in reaction to my piece. Not entirely, you know, and not entirely. There were some really beautiful letters I got from men. But for the most part, it was men saying, but she really is a bee, or no, but she's really horrible. And I would write back and say, yes, I don't disagree with you, but I'm not saying my piece was not supporting her or not supporting her. It was just observing a phenomenon that is beside the point of her being horrible. And that could not be heard. And the women that emailed me said, thank you, I've been trying to get that point across for a long time, and it's really disturbing.
Well, I know that some people do try to make the point that it isn't so much about sexism. It's sort of about sexism versus racism versus ageism in a kind of smackdown this time around, and we haven't really seen that before. But it does, I think you would say that it does seem as though that sexism is sort of what's getting the most play this time around.
No, I wouldn't put those in competition. I really wouldn't. But I think that there's a way that... There was a Wall Street Journal article that came out around the time of my piece that was sort of a reported version, a more, you know, talking to women kind of version. And it was interesting to hear how many women had been in groups of men at work or, you know, friends, and that their hatred of Hillary or the kind of acceptance of Hillary hating had freed them to use phrases and say things about women that they would not maybe otherwise have felt free to say, certainly not in front of a woman. And there were a lot of women who were suddenly thinking, oh, God, this was really below the surface, you know, closer to the surface. And I think that you may well find that about race and about age, but certainly about race, I think that more people would be loath to blithely go there in front of a person of color.
So,
more of the kind of people that I'm talking about.
So in that way, her run has really exposed a lot of fault lines in the culture and
yeah.
maybe a lot of just what's been festering
there. I think it exposes it, but that doesn't mean that there's necessarily... I wouldn't put a competition like that means there's more sexism than race. I wouldn't mm-hmm. do that. But I think that it's maybe it's easier to expose. That doesn't mean the other is not there.
We're going to take a quick break now, and then we'll be back with our guest this hour, Peggy Orenstein. She is an award-winning writer, editor, and speaker about issues affecting girls and women. Her newest book is a memoir called Waiting for Daisy. We're talking this hour about her article, The Hillary Lesson, which appeared in last Sunday's New York Times magazine. We invite you to call in with your thoughts this hour. What lessons have you learned from Hillary Clinton's run for the nomination? And if you're a Republican, what does she mean to you, especially if you're a woman? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Veronica Rickert back with you this hour as we talk about Hillary Clinton's run and the lessons that we can draw from it, what lessons we'll pass on to the next generation, and what lessons are emerging now. If you'd like to join in our conversation this hour, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And Peggy Orenstein, we've got some folks waiting to talk to you, so let's go ahead and take a call from Mariel in Cincinnati. Hi, Mariel. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to just make a point that when this campaign began ages ago, I rather favored Hillary because I liked what she was saying and so forth. And then she seemed to change and try to become more masculine. And I thought, well, you know, I didn't like what I was hearing in her
voice. What do you mean by becoming more masculine?
Well, trying to be tough, I guess.
And, well, just to play devil's advocate here, wouldn't a presidential hopeful have to be tough?
Not in the way she did.
Mm-hmm.
No,
mm-hmm.
I don't think so. It didn't seem like she was being herself to me. And I kind of showed at one point where she broke into tears sometime back. But, you know, she just didn't seem to be a woman talking anymore. And then also some of the things she was saying, her attitude toward the war and so forth, I began to be separated from her ideas. But it was mainly the idea that she wasn't really being herself.
Okay.
It seemed to me.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Mariel. And Peggy Orenstein, do you think this is what other voters are thinking as well, that they want a woman to be a, you know, more typical woman? Not, maybe not typical is not the right word, but a softer woman, and it's hard to see a woman with such strength.
I certainly that transition that the caller noticed was there, and suddenly the most common adjective used to describe, or is it a noun, to describe Senator Clinton was pugnacious. It's a noun. That was the big word everywhere. But I think it's a real double bind. This is one of those things that makes it difficult to be a woman politician, because if you show vulnerability, you're accused of being too soft and not able to bear the standard well enough and not able to handle the tough issues. And if you come off as too tough, people say that you're pretending to be a man, and that's no good either. So it can be, I think, particularly trying. And one thing that surprised me, in the piece in the Times, they do these little boxes next to the articles, next to those front-of-the-book articles that this was, where they have some kind of statistical thing. And what they did with this one was look at the percentage of women in major political office. And weirdly, the percentage of women in the Senate, the House, and who have governorships was all the same. It was all 16%. And I would bet if you asked Americans that they think way more, a much higher percentage of the Senate, the House, and American governors are women than 16%. But I think it's telling that after all this time, it's still women are either reluctant to run or aren't winning. And I think it's in part because of these subtle differences in judgment in the way that we look at them.
Well, you have some other statistics in your article as well that were kind of surprising to me. You write that nationally, only 12 women lead Fortune 500 companies, and only 18 women are partners at major law firms.
Oh, 18%.
18%. So, 18. Well, that would have been surprising. But still,
and I know every one of them personally. Yeah.
Those statistics still, percent or numbers, yeah. They're not very comforting.
No, 18%, although for many years women have been bouncing 40% up to 50% of law school classes. So those things mean something. And I did not get to throw in, because I had limited space, but the percentage of undergraduate women declaring computer science majors has dropped by 70% since 2000. And that's certainly a trend. You'd think, well, what's that about? I mean, that's the wrong direction for sure, you know? This is all sort of looking at this duality of where are we getting ahead, where are we not, what does it mean, what's real, what's not real. What I was looking at, in a way, aside from Hillary herself, was our daughters, and that we say to our daughters, you can do anything, you can be anything. And is that true or is that not true? And what does that all mean?
How have you framed it to your daughter? I mean, obviously she's 5, so it's not as though you're having a really sophisticated conversation here. But I mean, you're going to talk about it at some point.
Yeah, my response to the bumper sticker I mentioned before, the Hillary bumper sticker, was, "Look, honey, a bakery. Want a cookie?" That always works.
Distract, something shiny.
Yeah. I've been writing about this because I think that it does start in a way very young with girls. I wrote a piece about the Disney princesses a while back, which also got a lot of feedback, and what the rise of the princesses means about girls today. But it's interesting because I think it's hard, and I worry that if you dwell on the negative, then you set them up to be victims. But if you don't explain, if you don't talk about that, if you don't talk about sort of what is also true along with the progress, then you're setting them up for failure, and to think that if they do fail, that it's personal rather than systemic. So it's a hard call. I mean, you have a generation of girls now who are valedictorians, who are going to be the dominant ones in their college classes, all of this. So they don't have, they have a sense of entitlement, thank goodness, you know. And you don't want to pierce that, but you also want them to be prepared for what they may need to face. So it's a tough one.
Let's take another call. Here is Kate with us from Madison. Hi, Kate. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. Thank you. First, I wanted to thank the guest. I haven't read your book or article, but I definitely will. And I agree with you when you said not supporting Hillary does not mean you're sexist, but a country that doesn't support women is sexist. And I get a kick out of the Obama campaign, how they always talk about, look at the math, Hillary can't win, she's out of here and stuff. But, you know, and that there's, and then they argue for most of the male pundits, CNN, MSNBC, which is dominated by white older males, and if you notice, they never have any older women pundits. It's all young women. But if you look at just the math, and I think our population in the United States now is approximately 54% female, 46% male. Our federal government is still 91% male. And, I mean, look at our Supreme Court. We're backtracking. We've lost a woman in the Supreme Court. We've never had a woman in the executive branch. And our legislative branch, I think, is around 86% male. So, you know, people who say that there is no sexism are ignoring the facts. And, you know, I have two daughters who just graduated from Madison. One's going on to law school. And I feel like you, it's like, you know, I've been pushing them to achieve, to do well. But this is horrible for them to see what Hillary has been going through. And, you know, and again, in our country, besides the government being controlled by, I think the next most important institution in our country is our press. It's supposed to be our free press. But if you turn on CNN, MSNBC, any of the network shows, it's all males, hour after hour after hour. The women get to be on weekends or in the mornings. And so they are dominating this whole primary, and they're all from the start against Hillary. So anyway, I just think, you know, people who doubt the sexism in this country need to look at the facts, and the facts do say that we're ranked 71st in the world now for women leaders. So, but anyway, thank you very much, Peggy Orenstein, for your voice.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Kate. Peggy Orenstein, that's what you were talking about earlier, 16% of women in Congress, the House and the Senate. What do you think about what Kate said?
Well, you know, I think she's absolutely right. And certainly that issue of female pundits, yeah, you're not going to see, and if you do see the older woman, maybe she's there, but you think she's younger because of the plastic surgery and the Botox. So you're not really, mm-hmm. you know, she's actually not much older than she looks. But, you know, you can look at also the whole Ann Coulter, you know, young Philly Republican phenomenon for that, too. Somebody said the most powerful women in this country right now seem like it's older men and very young women, which is really disturbing. And then the other aspect I didn't get into in this piece, which is because it was a short piece, was the other thing our girls are seeing is the whole Elliot Spitzer thing and the stand by your man when he's, you know, gone off and had his gone off with the high priced call girl. Or whatever, you know, over and over and over we see that, and I think that's very confusing and disheartening to girls too. And for me, another thing that I'm very disturbed by is that women aren't going into politics now. The percentage of women who are going into politics has dropped in this generation, in women in their 40s, women in their 30s. So I'm wondering a lot about that too, whether that's a result of this or whether that's, you know, the busy way we live our lives, or whether we just don't have time to do it because we're too busy on email, or...
Or what about a general sort of disenchantment with politics?
Yeah, malaise. I guess that could be it, too. But it is, you know, there's a tendency to think, well, time will take care of this because, you know, women, as barriers drop, more and more women will do whatever it is, you know, go into business, go into law, go into politics, but go into science. That does not appear to be happening at the, it just, there seems to be a leak in the pipeline somewhere.
Well, just going back to the pundits, though, I had sort of thought that maybe that was changing a little bit. You got Candy Crowley, who's a very comfortable looking woman, and you got Christine Amanpour, who, you know, she's not in the young Philly breed. And I saw Donna Brazile on CNN the other night, and I'm starting to see women that don't look like the lithe Philly.
That's great. Yeah, I think that they're still not the, you know, and I will believe that when I see a lot more of it. I always hesitate to say that seeing one, two, or three of something
right.
means the phenomenon is over. You know, it's like remember the Year of the Woman? Are you old enough, Veronica?
Actually, I don't remember the Year of the Woman.
Way back in 1992, I think it was. We had a year, the Year of the Woman.
1992.
I think it was 1992. It was election year when all of a sudden women swept into power, into the, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer. There was a bunch of women who... Yeah, we had a year. It's over now. That's why you don't remember it.
We had a 1 year, huh?
We had a year. But there was this feeling that, oh, boy, the tide, you know, everything has changed. It's all over now. It's all fine now. And, you know, it was that year, and then now we don't have it anymore. It's a shame.
Let's get a male voice in on this. We've got Jim here from Milwaukee. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. I'm 68. I voted for Obama. And I remember in the 60s on the parish... in my parish during Mass, defending a priest who was being verbally assaulted by other parish members because they were electing women to the parish council. Hmm. To me, you know, being gay, black, or a woman is irrelevant, but a lot of people in my generation don't get it, but the younger generation is changing. Second point is that, but I do emphasize that women have a long history of legitimate grievances in terms of how they've been treated. Second point is that there has been sexism in the campaign. Obama was guilty of the sweetie thing. I've been guilty of it, live and learn. But I don't see that as a pattern of behavior from the Obama campaign, but I do see a lot of it from the pundits. And McCain himself was quoted in the New Yorker as actually saying at one time, telling a joke, saying that Chelsea Clinton was not pretty because she was Janet Reno's child, which gives you some idea where the country is still in terms of sexism. Mm. the final point that I want to make is that the reason I voted against Hillary, to me, are the merits of the issue, and there are two key ideas. First is that as the campaign developed, especially after the Wisconsin campaign, I don't think any rational person can say that the Clinton campaign didn't play the race card. The other issue that centered me against voting against Hillary was the fact that she did have the intelligence and capability to be president, and does have the intelligence and capability to be president, but it's that very lack of use of that intelligence that turned me against her. On the one hand, she's certainly smart enough to be president and hang with a Rhodes Scholar, but she's not smart enough to be conned into going to war, and I couldn't buy that. To me, that was just transparently phony and a transparent sellout, and there was just no way that I could vote for her as a progressive.
That's totally legitimate, to vote against her on, or to vote for another candidate based on issues. You know, you can argue that till the cows come home with somebody who supports Hillary, but that is the reason we should vote or not vote for somebody, is because of their stand on issues.
Well, and to tie in with that, we had an email from another Jim. This Jim was in Stevens Point, who emailed, "Does voting for Senator Clinton mean that you are anti-African American? And if not, why is voting for Senator Obama anti-woman?" And I think these are things people are thinking about as they sort of justify their choices and feeling like there is maybe a subtle pressure,
right,
internally,
and
at least.
There is a segment of the population on both sides of that question. There are people who vote for Clinton because they're racist. There are people who vote for Obama because they're sexist. But I think the majority, as I was saying, not voting for Clinton does not make you sexist. But despite that, there is an undercurrent of sexist response to her and an attitude towards her that is separate from that. That is really interesting, an interesting phenomenon to look at in the media and in the culture at large, and what it may mean about where we're at on these issues right now.
We're going to take a quick break right now as we talk with Peggy Ornstein. She is an award-winning writer, editor, and speaker about issues affecting girls and women. This hour, we are talking about her recent article from last Sunday's New York Times Magazine. It's called The Hillary Lesson. That's what we're trying to figure out. What are the lessons from Hillary Clinton's run for the nomination? How are you framing it as a man or a woman? Does it mean something significant for women, or has the response revealed something about societal attitudes toward women? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. We'll have a line for you at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, it's Talk of the Nation Science Friday. NASA plans to land another spacecraft on Mars this Sunday. After 1 on Talk of the Nation Science Friday, a preview of the Phoenix Mars mission. I'm Veronica Rickert, back with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking this hour with Peggy Ornstein, who wrote the piece The Hillary Lesson, which appeared in last Sunday's New York Times Magazine. If you'd like to join our conversation this hour and tell us what you think about Hillary's run and what lessons you're drawing from it, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Peggy Ornstein, we've been talking about some of the things that have been exposed with Hillary Clinton's run. Do you also feel like, you know, maybe it's a healthy thing, sort of like intervention time? Now we can sort of finally talk about some of these things that have been settling underneath the surface.
I hope so. I don't know. I think only time will tell that. It's really hard to know that right now. It's been an interesting conversation. I think, you know, what I hope that it can. This is why I say Hillary's so complex, because I think that it does make it difficult for a lot of people to hear this aspect of the conversation. Other things about her, her backstory, the baggage she carries to here. But I don't know at this juncture that there wouldn't be a woman where that's the case at this juncture in history. You know, I mean, it's pretty common for women to come to power through a pioneering woman through a man. You know, whether you're looking at Indira Gandhi or Benazir Bhutto, you know, people like Margaret Thatcher are sort of more the exception that way. Christina Hefner. So a lot of women do come with these backstories. But I would like to think that's true, yeah. I mean, and in revealing the sexism, also, I think what's complicated about it is to recognize that that does not mean that the progress doesn't exist. And that, I think, is what, you know, what I was saying is so confusing about talking to our daughters, is that both are true. And that's, I find that just very, as an observer of the culture, a really interesting thing to be looking at right now.
Well, it does seem like a really uniquely interesting time. I mean, I was wondering if Hillary Clinton's general run was sort of analogous to, Barack Obama's big speech that he gave in response to Jeremiah Wright, where he sort of talked about racism in this very, very open way that a lot of people said was pretty revolutionary. And I'm wondering if Hillary Clinton has done the same thing in sort of a more, you know, general way.
I don't think that she's been able to take that step of inspiring, of turning it in that way, I guess. She's talking about the sexism in the campaign, but she isn't. I don't think that she has done that kind of Jeremiah Wright speech. I'll say, I wrote an essay for the Times about Obama and what his biracialism means about the conversation about race in America, and I had written that just before the Wright speech, and what interested me about the Wright speech was the way was that line, you know, I could no more disown him than my white grandmother, and the way that the importance of his biracialism, not just his blackness, in making that speech. And it was notable to me because I'm the parent of a biracial kid, so that's another, you know, big issue for me. So for both these candidates, for me as a writer, it's not so much about who's winning and who's losing as what they mean to us as a culture or what aspects of them mean to us as a culture.
I want to go back to the phones now. Let's get a call from Gary in Madison. Hi, Gary. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks. I as a Hillary supporter, it says a lot to me about the sisterhood of women. You know, I've read some of the blogs on the New York Times, and some of these Obama supporters, these female ones, are, you know, just plain snotty.
Meaning what? What have you seen?
I can't believe that there are so many women turning their back on another woman. Hillary, to me, is a very capable, smart woman who's a very critical thinker, as opposed to Obama with his platitudes. I think that she's a very critical thinker. I can't believe women turning their back on another woman like this. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Gary. I was going to ask him what he meant by snotty, but I think we got the gist of the comment there. What do you think, Peggy Orenstein?
Well, I think there can be a particular vehemence that women reserve for a special kind of vehement vitriol for other women that they don't like. And I think that's, you know, I mean, I don't think women turning against women or women undermining women is a new phenomenon at all. You know, women are the keepers of the culture, and you know, women bound their daughters' feet. You know, it's in China. It's historically almost universally true, particularly between generations, that one generation of women sort of attacks its seniors, and that undermines women's progress. It's a tough one. I don't think that women necessarily have to fall lockstep behind a woman just because she's a woman, but I do think that there is a way that we consistently attack one another, whether in politics or in business or in other realms, you know, but between mothers, you know, stay-at-home mothers and working mothers, that stalls us out.
It's interesting hearing about the sisterhood of women because it makes me think about, you know, whether as women, perhaps supposing that we're more in touch with our emotions, that we're more inclined to have sisterhood in general. I mean, do we sort of have that cultural overlay for men? Is there an equivalent that men always help men, or are we sort of expecting unrealistic things of women?
The brotherhood of men. I think that there's a lot of images of brotherhood of men, and you know, because of war and things like that. But one thing: if you're going to be, you know, do you have to stand for a woman then, regardless of her politics, just because she's a woman? I mean, I think there's a lot, because there's so few women in positions of power or running for positions of power, we freight them with much more than we would freight men. And I would, you know, hope that at some point there are so many women in, you know, running for or seated or whatever, that there's room for them to have politics that completely offend me, just like men do, and politics that I agree with, and that I won't need to vote for them, you know, as women in that way. But right now, every woman who runs becomes such a crucible that it's hard to feel that way. That there's, you know, there's so much on every single woman who runs because there's so few of them.
Well, thank you for that call, Gary. And let's go to Diane in Rhinelander. Hey, Diane, you're up.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
And I really respect your guest's comments. I think that she sounds very knowledgeable on the issue. I guess I wanted to respond to Gary, but I also wanted to say that I resonate very strongly with, I think her name was Marielle and Jim, in that I have been a feminist for a very long time. I'm the one that wears the bumper sticker that says, you know, this is what a radical feminist looks like. I have been in a feminist or a women's book group for 27 years, reading only women to catch up on histories not reading women. And I was a strong Hillary supporter, and but I'm also a humanist and don't like what happened with Hillary's campaign in terms of how she's almost been afraid to say what she truly thinks of about the war, and that I expected more from her. It started back with her husband when he was in so much trouble. It seemed like he became more hawk-like as he got into trouble. It felt that way when things got a little bit harder for Hillary and she needed to justify her strength, that she actually became more warlike or hawk-like. And that was really very, very disappointing for me. And I turned to be an Obama supporter. But Gary needs to understand that there would be nothing better that I would love to do than to vote for a woman for president, and we'll continue fighting that fight both in local and national issues. But this isn't the one. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Diane. Peggy Orenstein?
I love when I hear people separate things out that way, so that the issue, the voting about the issues is a different set of things, and that's a really healthy argument. When you were talking earlier about the healthy argument, I think Jim and, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that last caller's name.
Diane.
I would love to see them in a room together discussing this. You know, I mean, that would be great. And I just also have to say, this is totally off topic, but I spent all my summers in Wisconsin as a kid. I'm from Minnesota, and I'm just loving hearing all the names of where everybody's from. It's so wonderful and nostalgic for me.
Well, we appreciate your call, Diane, and thank you for calling up with your thoughts there. And we'll go now to Jan in Duluth.
Oh, hi.
Hi,
I've been
Jan.
Waiting so long. I'm an old feminist. I'm 63, and I have a 30-year-old daughter. And when I think back, the original premise of the show seemed to be, would you hold up Hillary as someone for your daughter to emulate? And I surely wouldn't choose Hillary. Maybe Barbara Jordan. She was strong. She was a wonderful politician. I think Hillary is as much one of the old boys as the old boys are. I don't see anything that admirable about her. And I really, really would like a woman to vote for. But this is not the woman. She just is not it. She lies, which to me is very... I mean, just take the Michigan-Florida thing. She keeps bringing it up that she's won them even though they were illegal or whatever. Fairly non-controversial. I want someone who's honest, and I want someone who is against the war. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for that call.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Orenstein.
Well, and again, those are fine, you know, arguing on those sorts of politician levels, no problem about. Like I said, I was not writing as a supporter or a lack supporter, but I wasn't really saying would I hold her up as a role model so much as what did her, don't mean to put it entirely in the past tense, but what has her run, what lessons can we draw, and what does she mean? And it's interesting because you're right, Barbara Jordan, fabulous. But Barbara Jordan was a product of her time, and I think Hillary is a product of our time. And so that makes me look at and question and wonder about what our time is and what it means that this is the woman candidate that we have produced right now.
Well, to follow up on something we kind of touched on a little while ago, I think one of our callers mentioned Hillary's tears. And I don't know about you, but when I saw that, I thought, maybe this is it. Because in the past, tears have sort of signaled impending doom for political candidates. But she kind of got a pass on that. And more than getting a pass, people sort of said, it was nice to see this, that she really cares. And I thought that was really fascinating.
I thought that was fascinating, too, because when you think back on Pat Schroeder, right, she cried. That was it. You know, she was done. Not only was she done, she was buried. Nobody's ever heard of her again, you know. And it was interesting that she was allowed to cry. And you can argue, people say, well, was it real? Was it calculated? Whatever. I don't know. But it was not taken as a sign that she couldn't be president. And that was interesting that a female candidate was allowed to show a real emotion.
Right, and you sort of expected the pundits to be saying, we can't have her crying in important meetings,
right.
On the eve of a decision about whether or not to go to war, but that never came up.
Yeah, I thought that was really, interesting and weirdly heartening.
Well, let's take a call now from Robert in Shawano. Here's another name for you. Hi, Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Great. I just wanted to bring to the table here that, at the end of the day, people are people. We need to remember that, she's a human being. She's going to, make good choices and bad choices just like anybody else. I think the other thing is I don't really think there's any politician out there that's squeaky clean. We need to just realize that and take them for what they are. And, she's a woman. This is one of the most monumental times in our life. This is an opportunity to show teenage girls now that really still believe that this is not achievable, that this can be done. I think she's totally a very worthy candidate that could do this. It's really unfortunate that, you talk to young people now and they do call her the B word, and they do say things like, she's this B word, and they really have no basis as to why they believe this. And I don't understand how the youth in America nowadays, especially those little people that are turning 18 years of age and they're ready to vote, how they can make choices with no merit. She's done good and bad, but I think she's very worthy, and I think she's totally, on top of it. I've had the opportunity one time to meet her, and I did see her, in kind of a light where she was a little tired, she was a little irritable. She is a human, she's gonna do these things, whether they be good or bad, but I think she's totally worthy. Thanks a lot.
Well, thanks a lot for that call, Robert. And what Robert said is interesting to me, too. A lot of people have said she's the B word and she's other things. And I wonder, it's interesting how clearly people think that they know her. In a sense, it doesn't really seem as though these candidates are really knowable, especially when we only see what is put forward and usually carefully choreographed.
Or on YouTube.
there is that.
But I think what actually interested me about what Robert just said was about the way that girls have taken on the idea that Hillary is the B word, and what concerns me about that is that then they're taking her as a cautionary tale, and they're seeing, better be careful about the way you put yourself out there, and I worry about the impact of that on how young girls see their own ambition and potential.
Have you seen a strong evidence of that among younger women?
I think some. I think it's again, it's sort of too soon to tell in this particular cycle. I think it's interesting that not as many women are going into politics. Not as many women are going into computer science. Many women are going into engineering. So areas that have remained dominated by men are becoming more dominated by men as time goes on, rather than less dominated by men. And I think that that's significant.
Well, Peggy Orenstein, thank you so much for your time this hour. It's been great to talk to you.
Well, thanks, Veronica.
We've been talking with Peggy Orenstein. She is an award-winning writer, editor, and speaker about issues affecting girls and women. Her newest book is a memoir called Waiting for Daisy. Her article, The Hillary Lesson, appeared in last Sunday's New York Times magazine. Thank you to Carmen Jackson, who produced this hour. If you'd like a copy of this program, you can call the radio store and ask for 523D. The number is 1-800-747-7444. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.